everybody, and welcome to another edition of Orientation Ryan Station. We are here to talk about the finale of the series, The End. My name is Ryan McGee. I run the Lost blog over at Zap2It. With me, as always, from the Chicago Tribune, Maureen Ryan. How you doing, Mo?
I'm doing great, thanks.
And back with us, once again, from Time Magazine, James Poniewozik. James, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is, well, we have no shortage of things to talk about. While normally this podcast watches the episode and sort of talks over it in a DVD type of style, because of the length of the episode and just the sheer number of topics that we have to talk about, we're going to take a step back from that, talk about the episode overall, look at some high points, and then get to that important last 15 minutes, and then spend a little time talking about the reaction to the episode online, of which there has been much debate over the past few days. But I want to start off by asking both of you. All three of us wrote recaps in the immediate aftermath of the episode without really truly absorbing it. I believe all three of us had very positive reviews of the episode, and I was wondering if anything has changed in the 48 hours since you posted those initial recaps.
For me, I think it's not so much that I think differently of the episode, but that I think, more of it. my thoughts are on it are expanded from what I posted before, partly because, you know, when I first watched the finale, I thought, well, this really kind of needs, you know, almost two separate reviews, like a character review and a plot review, or plot/mythology review. And in my initial responses, you know, particularly since it was like 2 o'clock in the morning and I just was not going to wrap myself around all the plot holes and so on, I pretty much just punted that down the road and focused on the finale, you know, itself as an entity and how it provided, you know, closure to the show and its emotional impact, all of which I thought were really effective. But one thing I think I've thought about more since then that we can talk about is how the finale, and particularly the resolution of the flash sideways vis-a-vis the island timelines, sort of placed the rest of season 6 in context. So, you know, I do think that my thoughts about the flash sideways and the flash sideways through season 6 and season 6 itself have probably evolved some since then. And I probably think less well of them than I do, about the finale as, you know, just a piece.
Yeah, I think, I've just learned from other finales that your reaction to a finale is kind of in transit for a long time. So I'm okay with that. I think it's strange, though, that the sort of the germ of my reaction to a finale doesn't change over time. I still have the germ of the same kind of reaction I had to the Sopranos finale, and the things I really loved about the, you know, Battlestar Galactica finale, I still really love, and, you know, that hasn't changed. I think really what I've been influenced by is obviously reading a lot of other people's impressions and thoughts, and, you know, as I said in a later piece I wrote later in the day on Monday, there's that part of me that kind of didn't want to plunge into the world of, you know, the internet after the finale, because... Yep. You almost, in a way, I kind of just wanted that pristine moment of loving the finale, despite, you know, a few flaws here and there. I still really, really think it worked for me. But I think it's a finale where I can say it worked for me, and having read a lot of varied reactions, and we can talk a little bit about this, it seems to be a polarized reaction as well, but we can get to that later. It seems, you know, I really respect the people for whom it didn't work. You know, there was certain things about other finales that did not work for me at all, and I can absolutely respect that point of view. So now I feel like I logically, understand those people's objections, and, you know, it's sort of like certain bands. There are certain bands where I'm like, I want everyone to like this band. I can't see why you wouldn't like, you know, this band, because they're so great. Then there are other bands that I feel like, you know what, this is an acquired taste. If people don't like it, I can understand that. It's pitched in a particular key, and if you really don't like that key, you're just going to hate it. So I think there were so many other writers that I, you know, thought did amazingly good reactions, given the fact that we were all sleep deprived. But one thing that Tom and Lorenzo, our friends from that website, said, we've had Tom Fitzgerald on the podcast before, and they always have a really interesting take on things, and it really influenced me what they said, which I can see the following as being enraging, but for me, I kind of took it as of a piece with what Lost has been about. And they said that pretty much the entire show is a red herring, if you will. You know, if you sit there and say, well, this just turned out to not mean anything. Well, I mean, it kind of all turns out to not mean anything because it's just this fantasy world or even two fantasy worlds that they just invented in which the rules, as we saw, were just, you know, endlessly modified and changed on the fly. So, but that's okay with me.
Really?
Because it was, well, I mean, I'm just saying.
I guess, not to take anything away from Tom and Lorenzo, I don't get that at all. And
well, I guess
that
just
criticism thinks, elsewhere.
Well, but no, I think what they're trying to say is, did X or Y or Z matter in terms of the grand scheme of things that, you know, a lot of importance is placed on, you know, the cave or the man in black who, you know, essentially he's dead, you know, at a certain point, and then he's just kind of, certain things got tabled and didn't really end up mattering in the cataclysmic sense that we thought, like even the island being at the bottom of the ocean, that really never happened. And, you know, but they actually like the finale, and I'm probably mischaracterizing what they're saying. And you should go
I guess what I'm trying to get at is the argument they're making, because these are two sort of important different things,
yeah.
Is that there were a lot of narrative dead ends and untied threads in Lost, which I think is definitely true. Or are they saying that because they ended up in the afterlife, nothing that happened mattered? Because to me, that's almost like that becomes like a theological argument, and it's as if to say the notion of, you know, the notion of Christian salvation means there can be no drama because
no,
there are
they,
no stakes.
Oh,
under,
no. I think they were actually kind of tongue-in-cheek saying, well, certain things we thought were really important did, as you say, become dead ends. But they were saying,
yeah.
But that's okay, because these meaning and the weight of their lives and stories that were told still certainly have an impact. You know, I don't think they were saying, boy, this was just all a waste of time. It wasn't that at all. Or they weren't, I don't think they necessarily loved that last sequence, but they still absolutely, it was more like saying, they were saying that this is frustrating, you know, and I think a lot of people have raised this point that, you know, Lost, in a way, really, really took serialization to this exciting place. But at some point, the serial has to end. And at some point, the tension can't be, well, next week, what will happen then? You know? So I think there was that issue with the finale. It's how do you sustain the tension? And, you know, they did that. I thought they did that really well. You know, they kept it as a character piece. And I loved the fact that they gave us a chance to say goodbye in this really extended and very poignant way with people remembering their connections. So, you know, I'm okay with the fact that at a certain point, and, you know, again, we'll speak about this maybe in a little bit more in a bit, but essentially they basically said, okay, we're not in answer mode anymore. We're going to give you this very lyrical piece at the end that's not really about individual answers. It's sort of a much more big generalized thought, and I was fine with that big generalized thought, but I can certainly see that someone on Twitter said something to me really interesting that I thought was really interesting, and I think really beautifully expressed a lot of what the fans were thinking, which was they really wanted the finale to be as challenging as the show itself was, and I respect that. You know, so I don't know if my feelings have changed. I just understand other people's point of views more.
Right.
And I remain really, really pleased in a way that they went, that they did the Hail Mary pass at the end. And a Hail Mary pass is going to be either a massive failure or it's going to really hit some people in the sweet spot and be amazing. So for me, I'm glad I was in that latter camp. I understand why some aren't.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, so much of Lost has been about the community around which, you know, the show is based online, between friends on Twitter, on, you know, Facebook, on different wikis. And I think a lot of the problem is that I've seen online is that the reaction to the finale is so intensely personal that it's incredibly difficult to sort of come together and discuss it because you're just coming together from a singular sort of perspective and trying to convince someone or dissuade someone from their opinion almost seems impossible at this point.
Right.
Either you went with that at the end and thought it justified the entire series, or it completely negated not only the finale, but perhaps the entire series in and of itself. Like, I think people saw certain moments as their favorite moments in the show until that finale. People who saw Sun Engine, and I feel like they were, felt like they were betrayed. And this is something I actually want to talk to you about, James, because you had mentioned this when we were discussing stuff over email, about a certain trend in sort of internet criticism, but also criticism in general, that you've seen a trend of lately that doesn't sit too well with you? Do you remember what
we It's not so much about betrayal, though. I mean, it's just something that's bothered me in, you know, not just this discussion, but I've seen it in other heated discussions on, you know, on the blogs that we read and political blogs and things like that. But this notion, and it did come up, I think, in a lot of the heated loss discussion, this notion that you must assume that your opponent is arguing in bad faith. By which I mean that it's not enough to simply say I disagree with this person and they're wrong, but there's sort of, you know, an attempt to like delegitimize and excommunicate them by saying not only do I disagree with your argument, I do not believe that you believe that argument. I believe that your motives are suspect. You are, you know. You know, pick a thing, trying to be cool, or, you know, you can't admit that you're wrong, or you're just being a hater, or, you know, you're trying to talk yourself into this or that. And I just think that's, you know, I don't want to get off on too much of a tangent. I just think that's just a cancer in modern discussion. You know, you can disagree with a person and disagree with somebody vehemently without going to this really easily cynical place where you just assume that anybody who, you know, that reasonable people can't disagree, and that somebody who disagrees with me is not just wrong, but morally bankrupt and lying, you know?
Yeah.
Mo, have you ever experienced any of that?
You're in the pay of ABC for liking this finale crowd. It was interesting.
Yeah. But, yeah,
I don't think that's a huge element of what I saw, but I do wonder if I could tie together what you both just said, that I wonder if a certain amount of that assuming of bad faith and whatnot is driven by this feeling of personal betrayal, that I feel hurt and betrayed that this didn't work out the way I wanted it to, therefore people who don't believe in me or people who don't believe what I do must be driven by some untoward motive to defend this thing that personally upset me. You know, it definitely can be. I had been kind of dreading, to be honest, the finale of Lost. We talked about this, I think, in the last podcast, in terms of how people would react. And it sort of has gone the way I thought, in that I keep getting people who are saying, why did I waste the last 6 years of my life? And I find that to be even more problematic than the people who think I'm in the pay of ABC Studios or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's just laughable to me. That doesn't really bother me. But this whole idea that the 119 hours that preceded this finale was a waste of time, that just makes me feel sad, actually, because I thought it had some incredible moments of television and moments of storytelling in that run, to dismiss it. I mean, James, you've written a lot about this, about how people want anything with a sci-fi or genre tone to it to provide an answer, you know, with a capital A.
Yeah.
So what do you think of that reaction?
I mean, you know, I'm torn because I don't want to get, you know, too much into sort of, you know, hating on the haters here or whatever, because, you know, I think that you know, that's, people look at the show differently, and that's a legitimate way to look at it. You know, but I do think from, I, in some of this anyway, and in some of the discussion and, you know, cries of betrayal I've heard, there's almost, I don't know how to put it better than like a kind of contempt for the show. And let me explain it a little bit. I've seen a number of times since the finale, and actually before the finale, when people are arguing about whether, you know, how important certain plot elements and answers are. People who apparently have watched Lost since the beginning making the argument, look, Lost is not a character show. This is not, like, a high-quality drama. It's not The Sopranos. It's not The Wire. These are very flatly characterized characters who serve a purpose in the plot, and this is a mystery show. It's a mystery show. You know, it's a sci-fi show about, you know, a puzzle that needs to be answered, and thus it stands or falls on whether it satisfactorily and neatly answers those questions and resolves this problem. And I just feel like, you know, on the one hand, yeah, if that's what's important to you in the TV shows you watch, fine. But I got to say, there's a part of me that feels, why the hell did you spend 6 years watching this show if you think it's not that good? Yeah. And, you know, I will admit that, you know, that's my bias. That, like, I think that anything that elevates you know, or rather that aims to be on a level higher than basically children's literature has to be about character. You know, and if you honestly think that, like, this is not a character show and the characters are extremely flat and they're there to move the plot along,
then you've been watching
I would never have an interest in watching beyond a couple of episodes. That would just, you know, that's right. Flash forward to me.
Exactly.
You know?
That's exactly what I was thinking when you were saying that. That's the many shows that have tried to imitate Lost, and I think in the first season, more than anything, it established itself as a character drama with those flash, you know, flashbacks to people's pre-island lives. I mean, to me, you know, I think with Lost, and again, this is not to hate on the commenters or the haters or anyone else, I totally respect the people's opinions as long as they can refrain from casting aspersions on my moral character while telling me, you know, what a bad job I'm doing. There's this whole idea that people are watching, I think with Lost more than any other show I've ever written about, people are watching different shows. Do you know what I mean? Because they're overlapping. And I think that's one of the things that Lost did really well, but it kind of turned around and bit it in the ass in the end, because the people who were watching a mystery sci-fi show about a very vast mythology and conspiracy, and, you know, with where answers were purposely introduced in a very showy way, you know, questions and answers were part of the DNA of the show. Some people were watching that show, and I totally respect that, because Lost put that right in the forefront a lot of the time. It's not like those people were watching it wrong. You know, this is something that the show itself encouraged, and, you know, we all had a lot of fun with. I think what I'm seeing this week is that the reaction of people who really expected something else, and given that that's where they put their mental and psychological and, you know, intellectual investment, you know, they put it in that arena of the show and it didn't deliver. And also, you know, I feel like we keep saying, well, we'll talk about this later, but there was a very, you could say religious, you could say spiritual, but there was a very strong element of those types of things in that last bit of the finale, and I think that turned some people off in a way that turned the knife for them, if you will. So, there's that.
Hi, James. I had the pleasure of actually meeting you last week at Paley Fest, and it's not Paley Fest, at the Paley Center in New York. We were on a panel discussing the end of the show. But since a lot of the people weren't here that are listening to the podcast right now, Mo wasn't there. And because I think it's actually more of a relevant question now than when we asked it on Saturday, did Damon and Carlton do themselves actually a disservice by being so open with the media and with the fans? In other words, if we knew nothing about the show other than what we saw on television and discussed amongst our own, would the reaction to the finale and the show in general be different? Because things that we're talking about, that Mo, you mentioned before about things being placed out there, a lot of that was also placed out there in the media by Damon and Carlton themselves. They promised answers. They knew what Adam and Eve were. We were going to do this, that, and the other thing. And when those things didn't get paid off on a sort of level outside of the show, and that people are consuming that as sort of gospel, when that doesn't get paid off, that creates some anger. And I wonder if you guys think that that sort of interaction ended up sort of, you know, biting them in the butt a little bit.
I mean, it's a two-edged sword kind of thing. I think, you know, I think one great thing that Lost has done, and it's to its credit, and the way they've engaged with fans and everybody else has contributed to this, is that people feel a great sense of ownership in the show. And that works in a lot of good ways, and it also probably sets up a situation where, you know, ultimately, you know, that some people are going to feel not just disappointed by a finale, but this gets back to the sense of betrayal. Once you've established that sense of sort of, you know, co-authorship and ownership in the show, then it's not just, God, it really sucks that, you know, Kuseloff made this disappointing ending to a show that I liked. It's, those sons of a bitches took my show, you know, and totally misunderstood it and ruined it. They took something from me. You know, and that's you know, just something that you sort of get from, you know, investment. I don't, you know, in a way, I don't think it's necessarily good or bad. It's not, you know, the worst thing in the world that people are, you know, being passionate about a TV show, you know, if whether they like the ending or not. But the other part of that question, I think, is probably goes to the sense of by talking a lot, by doing the podcast, by discussing some of the questions and answers that concern people, did they just invite the expectation of more, and did that feed disappointment? And, you know, I think that's possible. It's you know, it's almost like the situation with, you know, a politician that, you know, once you start, you know, slowly addressing a scandal from the podium, the, you know, the media smells blood in the water, and then there, you know, there are just more and more questions, and you can never satisfactorily address them. You know, that's probably one issue. But the other thing is that I think that different people will take your willingness to talk about the mysteries in different ways. And again, this is, you know, I don't think this is necessarily majority opinion out there, but it is a recurring thing that I've seen, you know, in various blog comments and so on. There is a notion out there among some fans that Cuse and Lindelof basically promised that if you followed all these details, you know, that they were all important, all these things that they were dropping, and that would lead you to the solution. Now, I don't think they ever promised that. But I think the impression was created to some people just through that very openness.
Yeah, I think it's definitely one of those cases where people felt they knew what they were going to get via all these statements and podcasts and, you know, interviews and whatnot. I think it's interesting to me. I actually would sit there and posit, how much did they really respond to the fans? I mean, they interacted with the fans plenty, and they were that's great. I think that's a beautiful thing, and I think you know, it was really fun, you know, to go to Comic-Con and be in the audience. And there was really, what they did was create a sense of community. I mean, what they did really was essentially reflect what I think the show ended up being about in some ways, which was this whole idea that, you know, you build something together, and despite your differences, you kind of try to move on and make something good out of this thing, you know, out of this enterprise. So so that was kind of a natural, if that's the theme of the show, for them to do that. At the same time, I would sit there and I'm thinking about this, how much did they really respond to fans? And let me state for the record, I don't necessarily think it's a good thing for creators to always listen to fans. I think they really need to follow their gut, and I can disagree with what their gut told them to do, but you know, I think there's such a thing as too much interaction, if you will, in the sense of taking creative direction from fans. I think it's a fine line. I think different people walk it very differently. I mean, I think you look at Heroes, you look at, that's a show that deprived itself of any creative momentum by never being willing to kill anyone off because fans liked everyone. I think that's a dumb thing to do. You don't listen that much, you know. And I think if you think about these seasons of Lost, they kind of didn't have a roadmap in season one, as they've said. They figured it out as they went. In subsequent seasons, you know, yes, in the middle of the season, they would get the feedback that people hated certain elements. But in these last three seasons, at least, by the time they've gone on the air, they've gotten, you know, 70 or 80% of the season written.
Yeah.
You can't go back and undo that. So in a way, you could look at that as they're freed up from all that fan interaction. You know, they're freed up from the fans saying, don't do this and do that. And as they've said in interviews, you know, Nikki and Paolo, they knew from day one of that season that it wasn't working. By the time fans saw that episode, they were already writing expose to get rid of the characters. That was expose was the episode in which they killed them off. So, if you had taken a poll over the summer, hey, should Lost do this sideways universe where it will later be revealed that this really wasn't happening? Or, you know, I mean, even if you just said, should Lost do another time device, if you will, in the final season? Should there be another large element that plays around with time in a very mysterious way, and that way won't be revealed? How it's fiddling with time won't be revealed until the end of the season? I mean, I think 90% of fans would have said, no, I don't think so.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think they really kind of don't take notes from the fans. I think they like getting the general sense of the fandom, but there are so many Lost fandoms as well. I didn't even know how you could really service them all. And one thing I really liked in the finale is they really came down very decisively in certain arenas. You know, they put Juliet with Sawyer very decisively. And I know there's all these jitters and skaters and I don't know all the names, but there's all these different people who wanted Juliet, or they wanted Kate to be with Sawyer, or, you know, and she's ended up with Jack. So I really liked that they just were like, okay, we're just doing this, and that's how it is, and you don't have to like it. I mean, I certainly have sensed in some shows that they're just playing it straight down the middle to not make anyone mad, and I think that's creative death, personally. So I don't think it's a bad thing to have done. I think it's kind of a brave thing, because dealing that openly with both the media and the fans means that, you know, you get your ass handed to you when people don't like how things are going.
Right. And I guess where I'm trying to come from is, in terms of the people who feel betrayed or annoyed or angry with the ending, it's that it's not so much that the interaction ended up being false. But I think there is that sort of false sense of symbiosis between creator and audience. And as long as we all maintain the sort of, you know, tacit illusion of that, I mean, I understand that we're not, I like to think that no matter what I've ever written, they've never, even if they've read it, it's never impacted the show at all. But let's look at the phrase, you know, flash sideways in and of itself. That didn't come from the fans. That came from Damon and Carlton in an interview after LAX. And I can see how some people would look at that as in and of itself a misdirection. Like, it would be almost a classic Ben Linus type thing. It's not really a flash sideways, and that phrase may have led people down a path that was, you know, led them to be unable to predict what it actually turned out to be.
Yeah, and I think there was a lot of, I would say, semi-justified irritation with the fact that early on in seasons one and two, they were like, no, it's not purgatory. Well, I don't know. You know, I mean,
I disagree.
I'm not in that camp. I'm not in that camp, but I think if I were a judge ruling on this, I would say, well, they weren't technically in purgatory because it wasn't really named, and I certainly am fine with it not being named as that. But I think, I'm just saying, there's a sense that people felt like certain things had been ruled out, and then suddenly they weren't. So, and, you know, I mean, honestly,
I disagree. I have to disagree on that one.
Okay.
I know we're being very charitable here, and I try to be in a lot of things, but I actually think that is one that is not a legitimate criticism. What they specifically refuted was that the island was purgatory. The island was not purgatory. The island was an island.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
No, I'm not saying I agree with the criticism. I'm just saying I've seen people take them to task for statements they've made or what they think they've said. And I think sometimes...
Well, in that case, I would say it's a legitimate objection based on a misunderstanding of something that they've said in the past.
Right.
But again, if someone wants to point me to the statement where they said, you know, we will never involve the afterlife on this show, I'd be glad to see that.
No, and I agree.
I think to me, it's actually very important. I guess the understanding for me was there's a purgatory element to this final season in a major way, and that was just, I guess, surprising to me, given I thought that was off the table, but I agree with you. I don't think they ever said this is...
Yeah, I don't think it was. That was actually one thing that struck me as a little ingenious. It was almost a Man in Black like loophole.
Yes, exactly.
The statement again was that the island is not purgatory, and the island was not purgatory.
I think the most.
So you know, it was sort of the last place you would think to look. Now, having said that, I do think looking back at season six and the Flash sideways generally, that one problem I'm having with it in retrospect was that I think there was just too much in there that was only there for the sake of misdirection and to keep you from figuring out what it was.
Yeah.
At least, as it seems to me now in retrospect. Certainly, I think that Hughes and Lindelof, engaged in misdirection left and right.
Right.
That was part of their MO.
They did. I think the worst... I stupidly did begin reading comments, on my site. Not stupidly. I mean, everyone who's ever commented on my site, I love you personally and dearly. But I was distressed by one thing I saw. It's 3:30 in the morning. I'm sort of like, in another mode of delirium. And someone said, "Oh, but after the title card, there was all that wreckage on the beach. That means none of this ever happened, and they all just died on impact, 6 years ago, whatever it was." And that stabbed me in the heart. I was like, oh God, is that true? I actually hadn't looked past the title card, to be honest. I just stopped on the Lost logo. And that, to me, that would have been unbelievably depressing and really, really would have taken the wind out of my sails. I personally take the finale to have ended with the Lost title card at the end. And that was just a shot of some wreckage on a beach. So I don't know what that means. To me, that was them maybe attempting to be a little bit clever and throw another, mystery out there for the fans. What does this mean? But I just, another commenter quickly chimed in and said, well, that doesn't really mean anything because it was after the title card. And by the way, it was rusted out wreckage. So that just was stuff that was still on the island after this all resolved, the way that we saw it resolved. I mean, I want it to have happened. You know what I mean? I guess that's really my thing. And I think, if anyone were to come along and definitively say, oh, yeah, the island actually never occurred, that would crush me like a bug. I would just be depressed. But I hold fast to the belief that it all did happen. And the sideways world, what you define as being real there, I think we could talk about that for 2 hours, But, we have to take Christian at his word, I guess, that stuff happened as well and was real. I don't know.
And maybe it's because of the, if you took a poll and you said, what's everyone's favorite season going into this one? I think everyone would say, the majority would say season one. That seems to be the sort of chic pick. It's not mine, but it's probably my second favorite season. And what defined season one was that it was a character-based show. The finale of the show was a character-based solution, but the same people who loved season one seem to hate the finale, based on all sort of the accumulated weight and the elements of sci-fi and so forth and so on in seasons 2 through 5. And I'm just trying to figure out what responsibility, a genre show has to, landing, having its ending be in the genre show as opposed to, say, in the emotional realm. Because to me, I would rather have the emotional work than the genre stuff. Any day. Maybe I'm being a Lost apologist, but I think you guys both felt the same way in your recaps.
Yeah.
It goes back to the thing that I was saying about, the the charge that, well, Lost is not really, you know, or primarily a character-based show. I firmly reject the idea that a show, because of the genre, is held to any lower standards of character or any other, you know, literary measure of merit than anything else. And you know, that cuts two ways. On the one hand, you know, it means that I would never cut a genre show a break and say, well, you know, the characters aren't that well drawn. This is sci-fi. It's not what it's all about. Because that is the route that leads you to sci-fi original movies.
Yes.
You know, I just think, you know, there's fantastic, you know, sci-fi and fantasy, and there's no reason that it can't be as well written on a literary level, you know, if it will, as anything else. But that also means that you can't fault a genre show for, you know, in a big way in its finale, just, you know, being a story that services the people in it more than the events that occur in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. I think that, you know, I love Lost for the fact that it didn't ever fall. It really avoided a lot of sci-fi tropes or cliches or problems. And I, you know, as we're talking, I'm watching the finale again on Hulu, and we're at the magical glowy cave, which, as we all know, is my least favorite thing on Lost. And I think I would make the argument that the Lost creators were really better. When Lost was at its best, it was about the people and about their choices and about their dilemmas or love or hate or relationships. And, you know, they could write, at its best, Lost had great dialogue. It had amazing acting. It had incredible visuals. You know, and when all those things came together, it was absolutely amazing. And so I look at them doing this stuff with the magical glowy cave, as our colleague Alan Sevenwall has said, we learned about 2 weeks ago. You know, when they finally had to go into the story mode and actually pay certain things off, I think that's really when the weaknesses became apparent. And I think they tried to pay that stuff off, but to me it seemed extremely ad hoc and it did not resonate. It just, you know, I really, everything about the cave and the water and the pit and the mom, you know, all that stuff just seemed really, really, the dog ate my homework and this is what I came up with on the bus to school, you know? It just did not hit the sweet spot for me. And, you know, it's hard though. It's really cool to build up something fun like the Dharma Initiative and give all these little clues. And as we've talked about in the podcast before, many of my favorite novelists can climb that mountain of story, but on the other side, when they have to come down and have to resolve, they're basically, it's not even a controlled fall. They're just kind of grasping for stuff. So I think that's kind of where I land with Lost. Is I'm actually glad at some point in the finale they just set the story stuff down and kind of went into a different mode, because that different mode to me is where they do some of their finest work.
Now, I think that, you know, what I love about genre shows is not that, because I'm seeing, not only am I not seeing things that I normally wouldn't see in a quote-unquote typical drama, but the way in which good genre stories use those fantastic elements to comment upon the human condition in a way that, you know, those normal dramas can't, is where it draws a lot of its power. And to me, I guess I'm okay with the fact that the island was just a crazy place for, you know, extraordinary things to happen to ordinary people. I guess in the end of it, even though I spent, you know, 3 years looking, you know, at hieroglyphics and studying up on time-space and things like that, I'm okay with those being ultimately the backdrop that drove these people to do certain things. Because what I read, and we can finally sort of get into these last 15 minutes here, in terms of, you know, that community that has been, we talked about earlier, between, you know, the fans and its show, to me what I saw in that church was almost the most generous thing that the show's ever done for the fans, because you could extrapolate from what Christian said to Jack, at least in my reading of it, that everyone has certain number of people around them who are the most important people. And those are what's worth living. We just happened to watch that in a fantastic setting with smoke monsters and donkey wheels. And I don't know if that's how you guys read the finale. I'm interested to see, you know, how you read those, you know, those last 15 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I really loved beyond my criticisms of, you know, some of the hokiness of the execution of it, was that, as a good series finale should, you know, that last bit was really about Lost. You know, it really, you know, communicated Lost worldview, which is that I think ultimately Lost is a show about community. And that what is important and what is lasting and what survives us is you know, our interactions with and the meaning we make and the memories we make with other people. You know, that has been a loss from the beginning. Unlike people thrown together, finding out their commonalities and, you know, basically creating a world together. And, you know, it's funny, since I've watched that ending, I actually think that it's made me think a lot about the finale of The Sopranos, which I've been thinking a lot about over the past couple of days, which I also loved, and you know, Kieslowski have said they loved, in different ways, but in a way, they're sort of almost entirely opposed in their worldview. You know, the Sopranos ending, you know, I think takes you into Tony's mind, where, you know, death or the ending of something is simply, you know, the blackness and there's nothing left. You know, that is sort of its vision. I think it perfectly encapsulated that show's and its protagonist's worldview. And in the same way, I think that Lost did that for its characters and its show's sensibility and, you know, its show's philosophy. And I wrote about this some. I don't want to, you know, blather on too long about this, but I wrote a lot about this in my initial blog review of Lost, where I mentioned that, you know, I personally am basically a big, huge atheist. But I was really moved by Lost finale. And that notion of community and the idea that you create something greater than your life by your interactions with other people. Now, I can read that ending, that place they were in, as heaven or as something out of Buddhism, or I could read it, you know, as the last flickerings of, you know, of the firing synapses in their dying minds. You know, to me, in a way, I could almost more easily explain it that way than religiously. You could take it any of those ways. But ultimately, you know, I don't need, I mean, do we really need the finales of the shows that we love to ratify our worldviews? You know, if I am, you know, an atheist and a fan of a show, and it ends on a note about the afterlife, do I need to now not like that show? You know, I thought that it was like entirely tonally appropriate in precisely the same way that the Sopranos was, and so even though it was like so much different from that ending, it made perfect sense, the kind of you know, tribute that Cuse and Lindelof had been paying to the Sopranos finale all along.
Yeah, I thought it was intensely sentimental in the best possible way, you know, and I think, again, I agree with you that I do think it was meant to be, however fans took it, and they certainly are perfectly entitled to their various opinions, it was meant to be a celebration of what the show had been, and actually, I think it was very reminiscent of the finale of the last few minutes of 6 Feet Under, which I won't talk about that in depth for people who want to see that someday on DVD, but that was also an intensely kind of lyrical moment paying tribute to the people that you spent this time with and their lives and the connections they had with other people. So that was very, I actually almost think that was more moving and less cynical than 6 Feet Under could be in its last couple of years, which it got kind of dark and dour there at the end. But I actually do think, like I said, you know, let's think about a hypothetical situation where I think nothing can take away from me the power of seeing Jack die and, you know, seeing Vincent the dog run up to him and see him lay down in the forest and have that very uncomplicated smile, seeing that his friends got rescued. I mean, even remembering all that, I think I'm finding it very moving and very fitting for the show. And so I think that was paying tribute to the meaning of his life and the meaning that everything that had happened on the island. But imagine that that all happened, none of the church stuff happened. I mean, maybe none of the sideways stuff happened. And I found myself pondering that and thinking, well, that would be kind of, you know, meh. You know, I think they had 18 hours to fill this season. If there was no sideways, what, you know, baroque but yet uninteresting thing would they think of for Kate to do? You know, it would just be, I thought that, you know, we can certainly talk about individual sideways episodes or moments that just did not have any weight, that were frustratingly vague and wheel spinning. But I can see the impetus to do that because it's a way to look at these characters in a different setting, in a different place. And I actually really like the idea that if we consider that ending the Church of a Piece with, you know, what we learned a lot there about what actually sideways was. And in my mind, the sideways world was where people went to kind of try to work things out. Because as many people pointed out, you know, why would people choose, you know, to be a fugitive on the land? In Kate's case, why would Saeed choose to see his, you know, one true love, or his, I guess not what his one true love, Shannon, was, but this woman who cared a great deal for, married to his brother. You know, why would people choose these distressing conditions? And, you know, I actually was raised Catholic, very much in the Buddhist mode now. So I don't know if I want to put a label on myself in terms of what I believe, but to me, that's something that's very familiar in the sense of Buddhist philosophy, that people will keep trying, if you will, keep going through life and keep trying to work out their issues, and you attain enlightenment when you finally kind of reach these resolutions, and your being can kind of go onto a different plane.
Yep.
So to me, actually, with both my Catholic and Buddhist and, you know, whatever else I've been affected by in my life, with those worldviews, I thought that sideways is kind of a fruitful thing to think about. And at the start of the season, when I interviewed them, they said, we think people should really go back and watch not just the season, but the show again after the finale. And, you know, I think that would be a very fruitful thing to do. But I like the sideways. Yeah. I think I have issues with individual storylines, but I like that they again, tried something. And I think some of those sideways storylines were kind of interesting and kind of gave you these poignant moments, you know, Jack with his son, or Locke with Helen and being happy. That stuff was resonant to me, partly because the actors are so good that they really sold that stuff and made it interesting. So to find out that they all collect in a way station at the end, and it was very clear to me that, as Christian said, some people had died at different times, had long lives, and this was just them gathering in some non-time arena. I don't know how you would describe it, but
yeah, it exists outside time.
They find each other. To me, that was just so emotionally powerful. You know, I loved that. I loved that all along they were kind of acting as homing beacons for each other, and they finally all came together, and they were not in distress. They were not, you know, going through all these crazy travails. They were able to just come together and live, you know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, without this sort of sideways world, if you had the show end the way it did, it would be a story about Jack, and that's clearly not of a piece with what the show is trying to state. As you guys have both said, the show is about community. And I like the idea that Kate is still on the run. I like the fact that, you know, Saeed is putting all these obstacles in front of himself. These are people who have unresolved issues. It's not that when they left the island or when they died, they let go. They, you know, the sideways world affords them a space to work through things once again and re-find each other and get moments that were just not possible on the island, even if they were born out of that. And the other thing I liked is that, you know, one of my favorite things of the finale was Ben sitting alone outside the church, unable to bring himself to move in. The idea that Anna Lucia, you know, is not ready yet. The people at Charlotte are not ready yet.
Yeah.
It's not that everyone just got a happy ending in the sort of, you know, church. That there's still work to be done, which speaks to the fact that everything that you do in your life, no matter what it is, has some sort of consequence. And that's all I wanted out of this sort of sideways world, is to make sure that the things that happened on the island, in reality, had some sort of weight. And having Ben out there, I mean, you get all these great moments. I mean, Ben apologizing to Locke. I mean, we had the great scene earlier where he, you know, gives the eulogy over Locke's grave with the implication of, I wish I could have told you this while you were alive. Jack, for, you know, however many seasons since he's been bearded at the end of Through the Looking Glass, has been trying to avenge John Locke, you know, and wishing he could have, you know, worked together with him in the way that they were potentially meant to do so. We get that paid off in this sort of, you know, in this flash sideways. And that's what I mean about genre shows being allowed, given the opportunity to pay these things off in a way that doesn't feel, you know, contrived. And I know a lot of people thought the sideways world was contrived, but for me, it worked like gangbusters, and I'm not going to apologize for that.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that, you know, there are definitely elements of the logic of the Flash sideways world that still don't work for me. And, you know, maybe they will upon more thought, or maybe they won't. But, you know, for instance, if these characters are working through something that they need to let go of, why is it that, in general, we don't see them come to that point of being ready to let go through their actions in the sideways world, but rather by being reminded of their previous life, of the events on the island? Like you know, logically, it makes sense for me in the idea, you know, that they need that knowledge of the horrible things that they've gone through on the island, and you know the people they fell in love with there, and so on, to make them complete. But that kind of takes me back to the idea, well then, functionally for them, what purpose does Flash Sideways really serve? Because, you know, I still had always liked the idea in Lost that the island, while not being purgatory, was a place where people were working through and trying to avoid making the same mistakes that we saw in their flashbacks that they had made their entire lives. Having said all that, I think that, you know, given that this was the direction they decided to go, in the finale itself, I think the Sideways ended up being really an elegant and, to me, actually surprisingly moving way of dealing with a lot of elements of closure that you otherwise wouldn't have gotten. It was sort of an economical and logical way of kind of, you know, taking you back to the beginning of the series, because people literally had to remember what they went through on the island. It gave you these, you know, these sort of curtain calls, and as you said, you know, Ryan, it was a way of kind of getting the gang back together to remind you that it wasn't about just the last surviving characters, but it was about the entire ensemble. And you know, I would also just add that I would reject this notion that it was somehow tying a happy bow on the show. Because you know, when you think about it, Lost is still, when it comes down to it, a show in which many, if not most, of the characters we really liked died. Some of them horribly, you know, and some of them, you know, frustrated and disappointed in terribly sad ways. Whether you read the sideways as heaven or purgatory or this thing or that, or as literal or as metaphorical, it doesn't erase those facts of their lives. You know, any more than, you know, as I said, any more than you could argue that, well, if you believe in heaven, then drama as a literary form is impossible, because ultimately things on in our, you know, corporeal lives have no stakes.
I agree that, you know, there were so many sad things that happened and people died, and, you know, the death of Locke is still one of the saddest things, you know, I feel like the show's ever done. But I think in a way that was the show being respectful of both the characters and the audience, that things had to have weight. That you can't have, you know, happiness without these horrible moments. You can't have the redemption without the valley of doubt. And that's, to me, really what it was about, was creating these emotional moments. And kind of, it was an adventure drama that just was cool to look at times. And it was also a very intimate, almost, you know, chamber piece at times, where it was just sort of a few characters working something out or trying to find some scrap of contentment, or at least just something to help them get through the next moment or next day. I don't know. I mean, I think the ending for me, I just realize it's so polarizing for people. I think if there was anything I would have changed, it would have been when Christian and Jack are in that back room in the church. And I realized that they were trying to make the point that many world religions have a similar thought process, at least in part, which is that there is something greater out there, and that you can be part of that something greater. You are something part of that, and that it's possible to change and redeem and enlighten yourself. So, but I feel like by loading up that room with the stained glass, and there's, you know, the Buddha statue and the menorah and the this and the that, and even setting it all in an actual church, I get that they would probably have to do that. I would have maybe liked a Shaker church or something. It just seemed like, for some people, the actual religious imagery turned them off. And I actually had kind of an ongoing debate with some people on my site about that. That, you know,
I don't know if I'm wrong, but I was reading that as a Unitarian church.
Yeah, that's what people said.
There may not have been a flaming chalice in the stained glass, but I mean, that in Unitarian.
It
seems plausible to me that the shepherds would have been Unitarians.
Well, but it just seemed to me that there were so many statues and bits and pieces all over. I was expecting like a burning bush in the corner at some point, or Charlton Heston's tablets. You know, it just seemed like they were really dumping. They were trying to, like, this is a religion thing, you know. I get that, you know, it's fine, but, you know, I actually felt a little bit sad that I think some people took such a different message away, which may have struck some people as, through God and through Christianity or Judeo-Christian religions, you shall find answers or, you know, salvation or this or that. I didn't take that from it really at all. I took it as, there are many forms of redemption, and, you know, however you pursue it, as long as you find some peace, you know, that's fine. You know what I mean? Or as long as you feel like you've done, you know, reached into something greater or something bigger or something more meaningful, then that's cool too. I think there is certainly, you know, James is an atheist. You certainly were fine with it. My husband is pretty much in the same camp, and he was crying at the end, although he told me not to write that.
Too late.
I just outed him here as a lost crying man. But, you know, it had a more, as you say, almost a Unitarian, you know, universalist worldview. It didn't feel like you necessarily had to take it in a specific Judeo-Christian context, but
right.
Maybe I'm just, you know, maybe some people did, and if that turned them off, then that's unfortunate.
I guess, I mean, I would sort of...
I would agree that maybe you didn't have to throw it in a church at all. Maybe Jack could have planned to have had, you know, an outdoor ash scattering ceremony for Christian, and they could have been in some...
Or just a very, I mean, I think the actual church scene itself, it seemed like a very plain space that was just kind of a sacred space, and that was okay, but, they stripped it down.
But if you have that without the symbols, then that reads on the screen, Christian Church.
Yeah, you're sure. You're right.
You know, I mean, it seems to me like you either need to take it entirely out of, but there are other ways that they could. You know, it was funny if I can just interject a little tidbit from my set visit when I did my feature on Lost. I actually knew because Evangeline Lilly glad it's me, that there was a key scene at the end of the finale where Jack talks to Christian. And I actually redacted that from the transcript of my interview with her that I put online, because I was just thinking that has got to be hugely spoilery. I'm just, you know, even though she said it. But you know, so over the three or four episodes between when I went there and when the finale aired, I was trying, you know, racking my brain as to, you know, how that would happen. And one theory that I had in my mind was, okay, so Jack's going to like die on the island or something like that, or you know, defeat Locke and something will happen after that, and he will finally on the island meet and speak with, you know, the ghost of Christian for the first time, not, you know, the man in black, you know, being, you know, impersonating Christian, but actually speaking to his father. You know, I don't know if that would have worked better for me if he had, you know, that's just a road not taken, because, you know, they did this thing with the Flash sideways instead. But one way or the other, and this is somebody who was never really that interested in Jack's daddy issues, like early on in the series, I found tremendously powerful watching that and thinking, this is Jack talking to his father for the first time since he's died. Yeah, that was it was not as devastating to me as, you know, I still think the actual naturalistic you know, Jack lying down in the bamboo forest and dying, that was to me the most powerful image of that finale, the one that really did me in. But I was surprised how much I was affected, given my own, you know, biases in the show, by him actually, you know, talking one-on-one to Christian there.
Right. I mean, I guess I would say the way I read it was that I didn't read it as religion so much as faith. We talk about this man of science, man of faith debate that's been going on. The show came down on the side of faith. And I think the other way, the code word almost for faith in the show, especially in season 6, has been the word trust. That you need to believe in something. What you believe in is sort of, you know, irrelevant. What these people believed in above and beyond anything else was each other. And that's the message that I took about it. And I saw the sort of surfeit of religious imagery as a way of a sort of a visual shortcut, more so than a grand statement. They had to put something in there, because if you put nothing in there, it could be, and Kate even herself makes fun of the name Christian Shepherd in the show, which is a way for the show to try.
No, I totally agree with you, Ryan. I think that's what made it so beautiful to me. And I remain really affected by that last scene. And even the image of Christian going into the light, and I've taken some pretty tough hits from people who think I'm sappy or stupid or, you know, not playing the full deck or whatever. And I think I am, you know, maybe a sappy person. I do get affected by emotional things, but I feel like this was earned, you know. And I think the whole idea that, as you say, James, that the series would kind of have this summing up moment that felt, it was almost wordless, you know, when they were actually in the chapel, it was just like this very, just a series of images of these people coming together. And I do think that faith and trust were what the show was all about. Do you trust yourself? Do you trust other people? Why do you trust them? And that was really Jack's journey. And so to put that grace note in with him dying in the forest was, I thought it worked. And I think if the finale had just been Answer Time with Carlton and Damon, you know, it would have been intensely less satisfying for me. And I think that chapel image will probably go on polarizing Lost fans, or that chapel scene, or the church stuff. But to me, it just was a commentary on something that the show has tried to say for 6 years, which is that all you have in life are the connections that you make, and everything else is irrelevant. So,
and related to that, one thing that was I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that was it. I was done.
One thing that was tremendously important to me, I think maybe the most important thing to me that Christian said to Jack, was that this is a place that you made, you know, right, that you all made together. And I think that is just, you know, essential to the way that Lost views its world and this idea of community and interdependence. It wasn't, you know, not only was it not, you know, this is heaven, but, you know, this was not a place that was made for you, you know. Jacob didn't make this for you. Hurley didn't make this. This wasn't about, you know, demigods or, you know, some ancient. It was, this is something that your community have made together through your interactions in life.
Yeah, I think.
And to me, that you know, that took some of the edge off of what was probably a little bit of a too soft focus, you know, set of closing images in that chapel. You know, and yet on the other hand, I much prefer, you know, seeing that and seeing, you know, Christian sort of walking Close Encounter style into the light than I would have here, you know, seeing, like, I don't know, the imaginary fan fiction of Jacob sitting Jack down in a cave somewhere and saying, so here's what happened. 10,000 years ago, aliens landed in Egypt. And it just unrolled from there and answered every question, you know. So, but that notion of this being a thing that you and your friends created.
That's me, I agree.
That was almost like a mission statement of Lost for me. You know?
I totally agree with you, and I think that's where I don't reject the purgatory label, but to me, this is something else. I mean, I was raised Catholic enough to kind of know a little bit about what purgatory is in terms of theology, and it maybe different religions have different meanings. But again, to me, this is something else. And that actually really, really got to me in an emotional way. And I think that's when I really started, you know, welling up with tears, is the idea that people would find each other through time and space. That to me is so resonant and so beautiful. And again, it does speak to what the show is about, that you have to do it yourself. No one's going to do it for you. And I'm so glad that it wasn't, you know, the superpower battle that, you know, James, you've written about a lot, you know, between, like, Jacob and Men in Black. It was much more about these people and what they chose to do and chose not to do. And I love that idea that they created that themselves, and that's what put it in its own category of specialness that other sideways world.
And one thing we haven't really gotten to yet, we're talking about, you know, just mentioning Jacob the Man in Black and how people were worried that their sudden insertion into the show meant we had been watching the wrong people the entire time. We really haven't talked about the implication of Hurley and Ben's reign on the island, which was totally implied and thrown together in a few sentences, but sort of spoke volumes to me about what the show was about. We've seen people for 6 seasons now, making choices that aren't really choices, being forced to do things against their will, being arbitrarily ruled by these rules that may or may not actually be rules at all as much as things that we just assume are in play. What did you guys take as the, you know, the takeaway with Hurley being able to run things on the island differently than Jacob had before him? And again, what does that say? What is Lost trying to say in general, with putting Hurley as the final island protector that we see?
It was a little bit to me of, you know, the kind of repudiation of the way Jacob had run things that I probably would have loved to have seen made a little more strongly in the show at some point, because there was simply a big part of me. You know, when Jacob is telling the candidates why they came there and why he decided they needed to be there and so on, that, you know, I wanted somebody just to say, you dick! You know, why would you do this? And in a way, I think, you know, Hurley, as the sort of fan surrogate, would have been a perfect person to do that. You know, and in that way, I think it was, you know, an appropriate choice that he would be as the longtime stand-in for us, the one who would take over on the island and I guess in a more gentle way, you know, acknowledge that, you know, Jacob was not, you know, pure good, and that there are other ways of doing things. You know, I also think the bit about Hurley and Ben taking over gets to some of the unresolved things about the island that eat away at me, like why does it need to be protected any longer, and why did they, you know, eventually die if they had no adversary, and how does this whole thing work? But, you know, I can for myself kind of brush those aside.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm just getting to the scene of the finale where Hurley is, I kind of skipped ahead, and Hurley is thanking Ben for being an awesome number two, and they're just having this nice little moment. And, I, you know, one of the things I've loved about the show throughout is when you get these combinations of people that you just, they kind of spin your head around in terms of what they're doing and how they're interacting, and there's these alliances that form that are just so unlikely. And I think, gosh, the comedy potential of a Ben Hurley reign on the island was just kind of amazing, and I would have loved to have seen that. But, I, you know, it's funny because, you know, you look at a show like Lost, and so many shows do have the structure of the hero's journey, and I think this is, you know, Joseph Campbell mixed with sci-fi mixed with Star Wars in a lot of ways. But I think that's maybe what threw me about the choice for Hurley to be the island protector. That really did throw me. I think part of it was it looks like a lonely job. You know, Jacob, I think, really, I don't know if he had anyone to talk to, but his happy brother or maybe no one for long stretches of time. So I was just thinking, gosh, you know, Hurley's a fun guy. I want to hang out with Hurley. I don't want him to, you know, I want him to have people to befriend and not just, I mean, maybe Rose and Bernard and Ben are enough companionship for the man, but, you know, we can only hope. So I think, you know, in the way, if you look at it in terms of the hero's journey, that just threw me that, you know, I guess Hurley, in a lot of ways, could be viewed as the trickster character or the comic relief or the, you know, the sort of the supporting, the ultimate supporting character. But he got put in a central role, and I think that's great because, you know, Lost subverted my expectations with that, and I still feel a little strange about it in terms of, you know, like James said, the mechanics of how it actually works. But, you know, it was cool, and I think it's great that, you know, Lost gave him a very touching love story with Libby, which, again, that was a great reason for the sideways world to exist, so that we got some of those moments to play out. And, you know, we got Jorge Garcia just did an amazing job with his character, and the writers resisted making him the one-note, funny guy who asked audience questions that we wanted asked and then said funny stuff and said dude a lot. They really resisted putting him in a box like that. I think I'm grateful for that overall.
Yeah, and I was grateful for the fact that I wanted something on the island to change in a fundamental, if small, way by the time the show ended. If we just rebooted with another Jacob figure, another Man in Black figure, and the latter says how badly he wants to kill the former, then none of this would have really had stakes, even if we had had the sideways world turn out to be sort of a way station, spiritually speaking. With Hurley, I get the idea that the island turns into a different place. Maybe it's less protected as much as shared. There are ways in which, you know, he will run things that might be better overall, especially if the island is sort of a implicit conduit to the rest of humanity. If you can change a little something there, you can change something elsewhere. I like the idea of a really long, sort of prosperous reign that was just implied by you're a great number one, you're a great number two. That sort of warmed my heart in a way. As long as something changed, and the idea that, you know, Jacob says it's all, you know, it only ends once, everything else is just progress. I think the progress goes on long after the show. That Hurley was just the next step in that sort of progress. And maybe by the end of it, you know, we're like someone saying it's full of stars, like in 2001 or whatever that evolution progresses as. I think that can be implied, and that's something that people can talk about and think about. And I'm glad that wasn't really sketched in any more than it was.
Now, to be a little contrarian, did anybody at least have the fleeting thought, my God, Hurley has just been consigned to a hellish existence on this rock?
Well, that was kind of
for an eternity or close to it. Like, I mean, I have to say, there's a part of me that, you know, might have liked to have seen it end with just the island being left alone, mm-hmm. to be an island, you know, with nobody on it.
Yeah, I agree that I thought that maybe they would find a third way, that, you know, a lot of people speculated about this, that maybe there's a way where there doesn't have to be a protector, that the whole cycle is just stopped. And I think that's where my brain was kind of hoping it would head. And I do think that's what stopped me about the Hurley thing, in that, you know, I thought, well, it doesn't seem like a cool job. You know, it just seems like it's a tough, lonely existence. But, you know, you can always hang out with Rose and Bernard and grab a cup of coffee and get some company. So there's at least, we did see Jacob leave the island to go do his mysterious, you know, stuff. So maybe yeah. Hurley can get out and about.
It's possible. If I had to compare it to any other sort of series finale, and I won't spoil it, it would be Angel, where the ethos seem to really be the same, which is you do the best you can for as long as you can. And the idea, if the cycle had been broken, I guess the implication would be that evil had been defeated. And I don't think you can defeat evil, which is sort of the point of Angel in some ways, and that's not too spoilery. But the idea that this stuff goes on, but maybe it changes and changes form and maybe gets a little easier and the battles are not quite as epic and humankind isn't quite on the precipice of falling over the cliff that maybe it once was. That's just a personal interpretation, but that's why I was kind of okay with Hurley. And the fact that Hurley doesn't do it alone, that he does create another sort of form of community, albeit a small one with Ben, where they're maybe just eating Apollo bars in silence together on every Tuesday or something. But that was fine with me. That worked for me, and I was pleased with it, so... Okay, that's all the time we have for right now. We've actually gone over a little than we thought, which is not surprising, given everything that's involved in the series finale. Hopefully, Mo and I will be back with another podcast or two before everything is said and done. But for now, James Poniewozik, thank you so much for stopping by.
Yeah, thanks a lot. It was fun.
Good. Mo, thank you as always.
James. No, thanks to both of you. And yeah, we hope to at least do one more podcast, kind of maybe question time, we are calling it. If you have questions, shoot them to us on our websites or on email. We'll figure it out. But hopefully we'll do posts just soliciting questions. So stay tuned for that.
Excellent. And until then, take care and namaste.
Namaste.